September, October, November. Have a time you'll always remember. At beautiful Mount Airy Lodge.
Make your fall fabulous at Mount Airy Lodge or Pocono Gardens. Do all the things you've wanted to do all summer, all day, all night. Winter, spring, summer, fall. Call 966-7210 for reservations at Pocono Gardens and beautiful Mount Airy Lodge.
Hello and welcome to FW Presents, the anthology show for the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and this is another episode of Mountain Comics, the show where I look back at the comic books I bought while on vacation in the Pocono Mountains of Pennsylvania in the 1970s and 1980s. And joining me in the cabin this month is our friend Tim Price. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Rob. Thank you for having me here. The lake looks lovely. The birds are singing, and all is right with the world. This is how things ought to be.
That's true. Absolutely. It's a very, very nice place here up in the Poconos, even if it is currently just in my imagination at the moment. But again, thank you for doing the show. This is great to have you on. This is your first appearance on Mountain Comic.
Yes, it is. Although it is pretty crazy that now, since I never podcasted with you before, and now this is like the third time this year. So I'm thinking 2020 is a fantastic year.
That's right. It's our year, Tim. It's our
year.
That's
right.
Absolutely. We have to get a couple more in before the new year strikes in 2021. So we're here to talk about Star Wars Annual number 2 from 1982, one of my most beloved Mountain Comics. And we'll get into the reasons for that. Before we start talking about the comic book proper, I mean, Tim, I have to ask you, like, do you have anything like this in your background? Do you have, like, vacation comics? Do you have mountain comics? Do you have something that comic books that are specific to memories of, like, family vacations or trips?
I used to. Unfortunately, as I've mentioned in my traumatic experiences before, that the flood of 1981 took a lot of those books away. So I don't think I really have any of them anymore. But it was pretty much a tradition for my folks, because we're living in Illinois, but one side of our family was in Virginia, and we would drive from Illinois to Virginia because there was no way with, you know, in the 70s, you didn't fly then vacation like that.
Yeah.
No, you got the kids in the car, you drove, you stayed at a hotel or two along the way, and that's what you did. And what my folks would do was buy sometimes those 3-pack Whitman sampler comics.
Sure.
Yeah. So we'd have those, or sometimes they'd buy Treasury edition books. Those would be great ways to pass the time. So I had plenty of memories of, like, reading the Fantastic Four Treasury with the Galactus trilogy in there, and like a Spider-Man one with the Ditko era artwork. And I know I had the Justice League America one. Remember the one that has like all 8 of them flying out from the center?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
It's about 5 feet to my left as I'm sitting here.
I'm not surprised. And Christmas with the Superheroes, I think was another one. So we had those were great fun for those trips, and they'd take a little longer than one of the standard like comic books. Mm-hmm. But yeah, sure. we had a lot of books like those, and those were actually probably where I first really read superhero comic books. The secondhand comic books that were gifted to us, you know, that were in the bad condition that had the like top third title part ripped off. For the store to get the refund, and the guy dumpster dove and brought those books home and then gave them to us kids. we had those. But you know, there was like no superheroes in those books except for like, but, and there were some, you know, off brand things that were, you know, things that were kind of still in the vein, but not truly superheroes. Like I remember very clearly there was one issue of the original Magnus Robot Fighter.
Right.
Turok Son of Stone.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but there's also like maybe a Tarzan here thrown in there, or even like Son of Tarzan. But most of like Archie's and humor comic books and, you know, licensed properties. So it's just not a whole lot of superheroes, but really those treasuries and those 3-packs and things like that for our trips were probably where I really read superheroes for the first time mostly. So that's really great stuff. I do remember even like one summer though, instead of going to Virginia, my family got invited to stay at a cabin up in Minnesota, right next to a lake that a friend of my father knew. He had the friend had his house and then he had a cabin. And so the cabin had, you know, just the basic power, no air conditioning, no TV, no radio. So, you know, it was hell, but, I remember there was one day when we were got to hang out with another family that was up at the lake for a day. And those kids had comics with them as well. And it's funny because I really don't remember most of the comics I had, except I had an impression that most of them were horror comics. And I still don't really like horror comics, but I still read them. Even though it's like, ugh. And there are a few of them that's like, okay, I'm still scarred for life from that image. I can still picture that character from that horror comic. No, thank you. But it still was like, at least it was a thing, you know, it was a thing to bond over that, you know, I like comics and they like comics. So, you know, it was a thing to do. And like the long car rides, reading them with my brother and my sister and just talking about them then. It's like, yeah, it was a great way to, you know, to pass the time, especially on those long trips. Just have something to do besides to be poking at each other and, you know, seeing how many fights you can start.
Right. Did your brother and your sister, I mean, were they as in, I guess they weren't as into them as you were, or at least certainly not now, because you're really into them.
Right. Oh, I'm really into it. My sister, definitely not. My brother still has a handful of comics and gets the occasional trade paperback, and he'll share them with his kids. But also what he's also equally into collecting like the little figures, little action figures. I mean, I think he's probably got a ton, like 50 or so of the figures that are based on the Superhero Squad, the Marvel Superhero Squad cartoon.
Right.
So he really likes that. And he still continually reminds me that his favorite Avenger is Hawkeye. You know, he hasn't given up on that. So he follows them in his own way.
All right. That's very cool, man. I said I'm amazed that, not amazed, but that's cool that you could find a store that sold treasuries. Cause there weren't that many stores that I ever saw that sold treasuries. They were kind of few and far between them. And I gobbled them up when I could, but they weren't terribly plentiful.
Yeah. And that's the thing is that because my parents bought them and I was, you know, this was still like the mid-70s. And I was like only, you know, 6 or 7 at the time. It's like, I don't really know what stores they went to get them. Mm-hmm. So I really wish I could speak to where they got them from. Actually, I probably could even, I've never asked my mom about that because I need to catch up with her a little bit sometime soon. I talk to her every week, but I don't talk to her about comics.
I didn't assume so.
Yeah. So I was like, I really should ask her if she remembers where they got those treasuries because that would be really cool to know.
It is kind of funny that when you're a kid, like some of this stuff is so important in your brain, and to your parents, they're just it's like, well, I don't remember that. You know what I mean? Like, I can remember mm-hmm. just a couple of weeks ago, Chris and Cindy over on the Secret Origins Redux covered that Secret Origins of the Huntress from DC Superstars, and I still remember buying that comic off the stands. And you're talking 1977. Mm-hmm. That was 33 years ago. No, that was 43. Oh, my God. That was 43 years ago. And I still remember literally seeing it at Woolworth's in the Neshaminy Mall in Pennsylvania. That's burned into my brain. And I'm sure if I brought it up to my parents, my dad would be like, what? You know what I mean? Like, many more important things has happened to him at his time. But for me, it was like, oh, you know, it's etched itself into my brain. So I'm sure your mom was going to be like, what? I guess we bought my comics? I don't know, Tim, did we?
Well, I will actually have to tell a tale on my mom. So I'll just keep between you and me and everybody who's listening to the show. She actually did buy comics herself when she was a kid.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she especially loved the humor comics. And one day she came home from school and her dad had decided that these were taking up space and threw them into a pit and just burned them because that was a thing that you do apparently. So
it's like extra mean.
I know.
Burn them. I mean,
it's like, well, you know, they're farming people in the country. It's like, this is just wasting space. They did not have a sanitation department to take them away.
Was your grandfather Frederick Wortham? Like, what was that? Oh my God.
He was from the old country. I don't know.
Holy geez.
Yeah, he's definitely Scottish. So it's like, I don't know. What that, I really don't think that contributed to that at all, but it's just one of those things. But so she, in her way, has always been, while she may not always like encourage my comic reading, she understands it more than you would think. So I'm really happy. So that's really great.
Yeah, you got to get her on one of your shows, man. That sounds cool.
I don't know if she would do that.
Well, I'll reach out to her. I have a way of talking guests into the show. I'll reach out to her.
I'll get you her number.
All right. Well, that's awesome. So, I mean, Alex, so before we talk about, again, the comic, I want to ask you about Star Wars. Like, you told me before we started this, you did not read this particular comic beforehand, but like, where are you on Star Wars? Like, I don't think we've ever really talked about it that much. Like, are you a Star Wars fan? Did you read the Marvel Star Wars series?
I did not read the Marvel Star Wars series, but I love the movies. I've watched the movies to death, and I collected action figures. So it's one of those funny things where, again, since my comic book buying started much later, it's like I started later than you did. I just missed this whole series. I just didn't really get into it. By the time I was like really heavily into buying my own comic books, it's like the series was practically over. It had like 100 issues. It's like, really? I'm going to jump on now? It's like,
Right. Yeah. Right at the end there. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, something I never really got into. Except for the fact that, as I was saying about those big long trips, one of the treasuries we had was the original movies treasury edition. So
yes,
that was glorious. And yes, I still have in my image, I can still picture the image in my head of Darth Vader standing in the one room with all the generals and just having the Dixie cup float across the room into his hand. And it's like, how is he going to drink it? It's like, just don't know. And that image is so strong from that panel that it still is like, I expect to see him holding a cup in the movie and he doesn't hold it. It's like, no, he's supposed to have a cup. Why is he supposed to have a cup? And I was like, anyway, that's my one real major exposure to the comic. Although I have started, reading along a few of the issues just last year, and I want to keep going because I'm having a lot of fun with that. I think I got the Long Box Crusade guys got me hooked on it because they were doing some coverage of that.
Gotcha.
So I was enjoying that. Now, of course, the other big thing that I had for Star Wars as a fandom is that I had the audio album of the story.
Right.
I can't believe it still was playing because we've played it so much. The grooves should have been burned all the way through by the needle by now, reenacting it with your action figures. So it's like, I love original Star Wars a lot. And so it's been kind of interesting to revisit these comic books. And I also hear them about, from people talking about their memories of them and talking about the characters in them. It's like, oh, that character. So but it's like not really into the extended universe overall. So, but I like revisiting Marvel's Star Wars. Yeah. That's why I want to do that. So this is a good excuse to get me another issue under my belt.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. I'm eager to hear what you thought of this, especially since you're coming to it brand new. I've mentioned on other episodes of Pink Fire and Water when it's come up, Star Wars was my favorite Marvel series. I never missed it.
Nice.
When the money was limited, which I know no one believes it was, but it was. But when the money was limited, my favorite DC book was Justice League. My favorite Marvel book was Star Wars. And so if I had to really pare it down, those were always the two that I bought. But this, of course, was an annual, which means it was something that was put out on top of the normal issue. This issue, Star Wars Annual number 2, came out August 17th, 1982, just one day after my 11th birthday. So I'm betting, my parents, I'm sure, forked over the extra dollar for this king-size annual. The story is called Shade Shine. It's by David Michelinie, Carmine Infantino, and Rudy Nebrez. And before we get to the story, I want to ask you about the cover. It's got this shot of Han Solo and a very Deja Thoris-looking type woman clutching him, really taking some liberties about where she's putting her hands, by the way, to say. And they're going into this chamber, and there's like these floating monks. There's no cover copy on this other than it simply says King Size Annual All New. But other than that, there's no story title or anything else, which is unusual. It's unusual for Marvel, but not for the Star Wars series. For some reason, I guess it was an editorial choice. The Star Wars comics generally did not have a lot of cover copy. I don't know when, maybe they thought it didn't need it, that the brand, the logo was simply so powerful you didn't need it. But if you look at a lot of the Star Wars covers, they're mostly just images. They don't have a lot of cover copy, and this is one of those. And so what do you think of this cover?
It's such an eerie image of the monks just floating there. It's like you really don't know what's going on. That's an iconic sort of image of Han as action hero.
He's got the gun out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's standing in the original movie's vest. Cause that's peak Han right there. Mm-hmm. He's got to have the vest. And yeah, I wrote down in my notes too, Deja Thoris is exactly what I wrote down for the woman's outfit there. It's like, yeah. And that hand is just drifting underneath his vest there. It's like, I think I would have recognized, I would have remembered this cover if I'd seen it on the stands.
Yeah. Yeah. It's by, like I said, it's by Carmen Infantino and Rudy Nevers. I like the black framing, the door frame, and then you've got this sort of color grading behind them. It's nice. It's a nice, like I said, I remember seeing this cover on the newsstand and being like, whoa. And again, it was Star Wars. There was no way I was not going to buy it, but the image was, it really does pop because you've got these monks in their red robes. It's, as I said, really, really sharp image. And of course, you're wondering, who's this woman? Because Han's with Leia. What's going on here? I mean, of course, when the time this came out, this is post-Empire, but pre-Jedi. So,
yes.
Han is out of commission. So, of course, you've got to assume that this is going to be a flashback tale, and we're going to learn in a moment that it is. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, they said the story is called Shade Shines by David Michelinie, Carmine Infantino, and Rudy Nebres. So, the story is Luke Skywalker, Lando Calrissian, and C-3PO are running from Imperial Stormtroopers when they happen across a convent containing a golden statue of Han Solo. The rebels are puzzled until a man named Vetter Pin appears, declaring that Solo is the savior of Ventuine. He activates a control on the statue containing a recording of Han's voice, which recounts the story of how Solo saved the planet. Years ago, Solo and his co-pilot Chewbacca were traveling to Ventuine to deal in Sansana spice. Unfortunately, when Solo asks around in a local cantina, he's run out of the place labeled as a supporter of the Satab. As Solo runs from the crowd, he accidentally saves Tyrus Cressala, the beautiful consort to the Satab, from an assassination attempt. Solo is brought back to the Satab's palace as a hero, where he discovers that the Satab rules the planet through the use of a stone known as the Shade Shine. A new Satab must be chosen every year because the power of the stone is able to burn out a person's body. The old Satab then goes into the Hall of Satabs, I'm saying Satab a lot, where he is placed in animation with the other former Satabs until a cure can be found for the burnout. Solo is placed in line to take the title, but before the current Satab can promote Han, Cressala takes his place, saving him from becoming enslaved to the Shade Shine. Solo tries to fight off the Satab, but with the power of the Shade Shine, he is too powerful. Luckily, Cressala comes to Han's rescue, preventing the Satab from entering the Hall of Satabs. I keep saying that word a lot in time, causing him to implode into a pile of ash. Cressala then ends the rule of the Shade Shine by walking into the Hall of Satabs herself. Han is declared a hero for ending the rule of the Satabs, and a statue is made in his honor. Back in the present, Stormtroopers finally catch up with Luke and the gang. Luke is able to trick the troopers into entering the Hall of Satabs by placing a memory stone with his voice in the nullification chamber. The Imperials enter the room and are immediately placed into suspended animation. Luke, Lando, and C-3PO then escape the planet in a Y-Wing. So, all right. You're coming to this kind of brand new. You never read this comic before. What did you think of this story, Tim?
Oh, it's a real trip of a story. I do like that that you also, as you're given the synopsis, you kind of do a Lando's pronunciation of Han.
I'm going to hear about that from the Gutierrez so bad. Han, old buddy.
Yes, right. I really did like this story. It makes me think way too much about some of the other things about the Star Wars mythos and conventions. So I don't want to get too deep into those. we can talk about those later, but just overall in the story, it's like, yeah, we got the kind of, it's very, feels like a Han Solo kind of story of back in the old days. You know, he swaggers into town, kind of accidentally helps somebody out and, you know, figures out a way to try to turn it to his own advantage by also still kind of trying to do the right thing. Reluctantly becomes the good guy. It's a fun story. And the artwork is, I really liked it a lot, except there's sometimes when it's like, the movie characters are just different enough from the movie, I think probably to kind of help with the IP. I don't know if that's really a thing, but maybe mm-hmm. it is. So it's like Luke's face always bugs me. It's like, but that's an Infantino face. So I understand that. But then there's Lando. Lando looks perfect. I mean, he just looks like sharp all the time. And C-3PO looks just amazing when you see those images of him. So the artwork is really pretty fun overall. I really like the setting and the characters. I got to lots of questions about the story.
Okay.
But it's a just fun issue overall.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to write a Han Solo story, it's got to be a flashback because, mm-hmm. Lucasfilm was very specifically like, you can't obviously use Han Solo because he's out of commission. But, of course, writing a Han Solo story is part of the fun because you get to, you're not bogged down with all the Jedi stuff and the Empire. You can just write a pirate adventure. So you just do it as a flashback. I like the framing device quite a bit. I do wonder if Carmen Infantino was given any reference to the Star Wars characters, because Luke looks like he does from Star Wars, not from Empire.
Yes.
He's got long hair, and he's wearing the white tunic. He's wearing, like, the dojo kind of thing. I mean, he looks like he stepped right out of the first movie, not the second movie. In the second movie, Mark Hamill's got short hair and stuff. So I wonder if Carmen Infantino just, he was, of course, he wasn't the original artist on Star Wars, but he took over pretty early, and that was right after Star Wars. So maybe they just assumed they knew, he should know how to draw Luke Skywalker, and that's how what he remembered. But it just looks weird that clearly this is post-Empire because we've got Lando, but we've got Luke looking like he did earlier.
Right.
I also like that they have to kind of dodge that. How is C-3PO running away from anybody? And he can't run from anybody. They have to just kind of dodge.
He waddles. He does waddle.
Those stormtroopers must waddle. Be very slow that they can't keep up the C-3PO. But he does look good. I do love it's not the splash page, because the splash page is the first page of the title, but I love the intro page where it's the full page shot of Han Solo, the statue. Man, that's a big statue from the perspective. Mm-hmm. That's like a 40-foot statue. I mean, that looks like one of the statues you saw on Coruscant at the end of special edition of Return of the Jedi and stuff. Like, that's a huge statue. But I remembered buying that comic and getting to that page, and it was like, oh, cool. Like, wow, Han Solo's like a god in this on this planet, which is really cool. So I like all that stuff. I'm not sure what I feel about the combination of Carmen Infantino and Rudy Nebrez. I just don't know if that's Rudy came from the Filipino school, and his stuff is very illustrative. And Carmen Infantino's stuff has a lot of movement, and Rudy Nebrez is not someone I think is great at movement. So I'm not sure they're a really great combination. But otherwise, it's fine. I mean, this is years away from Infantino's best work, certainly. And there's some stuff we can mention about some of the little idiosyncrasies he likes to throw in his drawings. But overall, I think it's a fairly solid looking comic.
Awesome. Now, I was going to ask you a question about if you had been buying the Star Wars during this period as well, besides this issue. And so in the regular series, had they done other Han stories in this period?
Yes.
Okay.
In issue number 50, they do a flashback of Han and Chewie as well for the anniversary. So that was something they would return to every so often, because you were like, hey, these obviously Han and Chewie are some of the most popular characters of the series, and we don't want to just leave them out forever. Especially, again, I imagine that when David Michelinie was handed, probably what he was going to happen in Empire Strikes Back, you're going to lose Han. You're like, oh, crap. Geez, he's one of the best guys. And I mean, there's a reason why right after the first six issues adapted the movie, what did Roy Thomas do? He follows Han and Chewie. He doesn't follow Luke and Leia because he's so much more constrained with what he can do with those characters. But you're like, well, I can just follow these two on different planets. So this is a way of getting around all that. So then, again, we go to this planet and we realize that this whole religious thing going on. I mean, it's Han getting involved in a political dispute. And in a weird way, it's funny, in the scene where he's hiding and he grabs a fedora and he's got the purple
cape
on. I'm like, well, you squint your eyes. This could be sort of an Indiana Jones adventure.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Because we got that, and he's he has a liaison with the local lady, and he's after stones. And
he gets in a bar fight.
He gets in a bar fight. Exactly. It's like there's very much a mashup going on here of those two things.
Yep.
But I kind of asked that question because I sort of figured that you kind of confirmed what I was thinking, in that they sort of saved the Han stories for special occasions like this annual, mm-hmm. where they're going to do an extra length story. It's like, yeah, this is when you bring Han back for a story. You don't do it necessarily all the time in the regular series.
Right.
Make it a special occasion. So
right. And he said, when he meets Chrysalla, as I mentioned, she is right out of the John Carter mold. She's got the mm-hmm. metallic bra on, and she's being carried around, and she's got like a little headpiece and stuff like that. She's Deja Thoris. She's totally Deja Thoris. And Carmen Infantino, again, I don't find his women like particularly sexy and stuff like that, but there's a couple of panels where he keeps things really simple. I think Rudy Nevers, I think, tended to over embellish a little bit, but there's a couple of panels like where Han sees her for the first time and he goes, a cart being drawn by some kind of animal. Just want to need to get out of here. And you see, Chrysalla looking at him, and all Carmine drew is like two slits, for eyes and a little wide mouth. And she looks like cute as a button. It's not so much sexy mm-hmm. as cute as a button. And by the way, we'll have some of these pages on the website. FineWaterPodcast.com, and that's where somebody throws a bomb at Chrysalla to assassinate her, and he saves her by firing his blaster and blowing it up, and that gets her, you know, she gets interested in it. This stranger is a hero. You saved my life. And she falls in love with him pretty quickly, but I can imagine, and of course, Han doesn't necessarily realize that she's falling for him, but he is happy with the good life. When she plops him down in that little handheld cart, he rolls back, and he's just like, Captain Solo, you must be living right. Again, it's very Indiana Jones kind of thing. You can almost picture him with Indy putting the hat over his eyes and going to sleep mm-hmm. as the plane heads to Marrakesh or something like that.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, and there's also just like a little distinction that Infantino brought here between the different species of human-like characters we have here. The people on this world are look like humans, but they're just a little different, because mm-hmm. they make a point of trying to call out the fact that, you know, Luke and Lando are not the same species as the people on that planet. And he just does that little flourish of kind of like giving them some thinner eyes, maybe making them draw them out a little bit, giving a little bit extra tweaks to their eyebrows. Nothing that you wouldn't see in Star Trek. I mean, it's very much a Star Trek kind of thing. It's like, yes, they're basically human, but they have some distinguishing characteristic that makes them stand out. And so he uses that pretty effectively on all of them, and he really draws it out on Chrysalla to, you know, make her look seductive. He's definitely giving her that approach there. But yeah, and it's like, even the horse-like animal that's drawing the cart, it's, you know, like a green lizard creature that also just has long legs, actually almost kind of looks like a mantis.
It does.
The heart. So that again kind of enhances the Deja Thoris thing, because that makes me think of green Martian kind of characterization there. So I think he's really leaning into that a bit with this.
Yeah. There is one thing that Infantino does that drives me crazy. He does it here is when characters are running, they are floating off the ground. did you notice that? And after he gets into the bar fight and he runs out of the bar, there's two panels in a row. There's one where he's running out of the bar. This is something I better take care of real soon. And then another one where he's running across, and he is literally flying. And it's mm-hmm. it's just an Infantino affectation. And I can't stand it. I'm just like, why did they put him on the ground? What is he doing? It's he's not Superman, Carmine. He's not flying. What are you doing?
He doesn't like to draw feet touching the ground.
I guess
it's
not.
Like he doesn't like that contact, having to draw that. It's
I guess
like,
so.
Nope, I just like drawing the figure, and I'll draw the figure, and I'll draw the ground, and I'm happy. But yeah, at least there's a touch of there being a shadow under Han when he's in that middle panel. So that really kind of makes it effectively. He's like, okay, he's moving, and his cape is really flowing behind him. So yeah, Han is running pretty good there.
Yeah.
At least there's no speed lines.
Right. So
we don't have the flash speed lines going on here. That'd be a little much.
Yeah. Like Han Solo after image or something like that. There is one really nice panel, and I'll definitely have this in the gallery, where one of these guys that wants to bring down the government, and he gets brought into the royal palace, and they introduce him to Vader's friend, this guy named Falaf, who looks kind of like Ming the Merciless a bit, and he's got magic. Mm-hmm. He's got the stone, and he touches the stone, and then shakes the hand of the guy, and the guy ages instantly. And in the last panel, there's a giant close-up of the guy's face as he has aged to an old man. And it really is it's very atypical of Carmen Infantino's approach, because all of a sudden there's like a million lines on the face. And it's this super horrific close-up of the guy as he's been reduced to just basically skin and bones. And it's a nice little shot. It's you know, it's not, I don't want to go too far and say it's like a horror comic because it's not that bad. But it's more grotesque than we would typically see in a Star Wars comic, especially that it's a giant close-up of the guy, which I thought was a nice panel.
Yeah, this was but it was a very chilling scene for them taking out what's his name? Fall off that way. This is the Satab taking him out. So hey, Satab is a fun name to say. It's okay. It's a fun name to say. Satab. Using his shade shine for it. And we have so he's got this little rock around his neck that is the source of that power. And it's my brain started going down this weird path, because it's like, but this whole culture on this planet uses minerals to provide their technology. So it's like, that's not really science-y. It's a little mystical, perhaps. So, but then I was like, well, you know, the Force is also thing in this galaxy. And it's like, I started kind of wondering, is the Shade Shine like a concentrated version of the Force in mineral form? And because that would explain all the things he does. It expands his senses. It lets him affect the senses of others. But it's to a greater degree than Jedi's and the Sith do. But it's like, because it's this small little rock, but it's like, you know, the Force is kind of like, you know, it's like air. It's everywhere. But you get that much of it concentrated into a small rock. That's probably an immeasurable amount of force in one small rock. So I kind of – that's almost my I don't like using no prizes in Star Wars, but it's kind of like my no prizing for how that thing actually could possibly work. If you accept the Force, then you know, an actual physical chunk of force could really do some amazing things.
Maybe it's just full of midichlorians. Could be that too. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe not. Probably.
Yeah. I'm going to excise that set comment from my brain for a second. Hold on.
All right. Sorry about that. I apologize. I'll take it out of the show. Maybe. But yeah, no, that's an interesting, there is no mention in this whole issue of the Force or anything like that. And, I mean, I like that. I like that it is a more grounded adventure, but of course Star Wars was science fantasy, not science fiction.
Yes.
So, I mean, Star Trek is science fiction. This is science fantasy because you've got wizards and people with magical powers and stuff like that. And later on, there's a sequence where Falaf is following Han and Krasala, basically using his powers, and he can sort of just like see them.
You keep saying Falaf when you mean Satab.
Satab, yeah. That's right. These names just get really goofy after a while. But I like that. Again, that's a whole cool sequence where we see them running, and he's got Infantino draws like these rings around them. So that's what he's seeing as he sees them, which is a nice little way of conveying that. I think that was really cool. So what do you make of the idea that Han? I mean, they don't really establish. I mean, they established that it took place a while ago. I don't think they straight up say when. I'm getting the sense that this took place long before Han and Chewie ever met Princess Leia. So therefore, Han getting sweet with Krasala is not cheating on her in any way.
Yeah, that's what I gathered. I mean, I gathered this was before the first movie, before A New Hope. Yeah. They don't come right out and say it, but he's so big into the spice smuggling now.
You figure that's still what he's doing for Jabba the Hutt at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is still what he's doing. Now, I'm going to have to ask the question because I just can't help it. Spice is drugs, right? In the Star Wars universe?
I think so.
Spice means drugs. In which case, does this mean that we have now crossed over into Dune? And Dune is actually the same universe as Star Wars. The spice was flow.
You know, David Lynch was supposed to direct Return of the Jedi, and he turned it down, and then he went and did Dune. So there is that connection there. You know, Han's a drug runner. Absolutely. don't sully my beloved.
I'm sorry. With that. Hey, he's He was my whenever we had to, you know, reenact Star Wars as kids, because of course you had to. I usually was Han, even though I'm definitely in personality, I'm more of a Luke, but I usually was playing Han. So yeah, no, Han's the man.
Yeah. Oh, he was always my favorite character. So then we get to the end and we're introduced to this concept of the chamber with the floating, with all the monks floating in and suspended animation. And that, I don't know about you, but like that notion as a child always really haunted me of like dead, but not dead.
Yeah.
That is, and then the fact that Crisala volunteers for it, and she kisses Han Solo goodbye, and she says, "You know, I will dream of you." And it's like she's going to maybe live forever, but not be conscious really. And I just found that very chilling. And then when Luke pulls the switcheroo on the stormtroopers, and they end up floating in there again, it's not, I don't want to overdo it. It's not a horror comic, but that final, not the final panel, but the near the end, where you've got the stormtroopers floating in there with the other monks. It's just like, I keep calling them monks. They're not monks, but they look like monks. But it's floating in there. Like that to me was like horrifying. Cause you're like, oh, these, I mean, they're the bad guys. Obviously they're stand-ins for Nazis, but just the fact that they weren't even killed. They're just going to stay there presumably forever in their stormtrooper helmets is like, ugh.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's exactly what I got out of this when I read it for the first time. And other stories like that in the past have always made me go, you know, they gave you the willies. I think that's the technical term, the willies.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, because you know, as they said, there's like hundreds of the previous Satabs in that room. I don't see any effort on their part to supposedly find a cure for this thing happening right now.
No,
there's just, no mention. It's like someday we'll have a cure for it. But it's like the current Satab isn't doing anything for it. And there's no mention anybody else about trying to do anything for that. So it's like, no, they're not. Nobody cares about the cure. They're just putting you in there. And who? And it's like, well, maybe when their star finally goes Nova, that'll be the end of it. But until then, it's like, oh, that's beyond creepy. But yeah, and for Crisala to voluntarily go into it, it's like, oh man, I don't know if I would have done that.
Yeah, to consciously do it to yourself is horrifying.
Yeah, and it's just use that as the way of dispatching the stormtroopers that were following them. It's like, yeah, that's pretty cold. Yeah. I gotta say, that's a dark moment.
Like Luke just kicks them in the room. He just jumps up to the side and just kicks them in. Yeah,
and the stormtrooper helmet is another one thing where it's like the design of them here doesn't quite look as good to me as I would like. That's all. It doesn't. The modeling that they do here, just it looks more lizard-like sometimes. The mouth is so long coming back around the sides of the helmets. I know I'm nitpicking, but I guess I would prefer almost a more realistic depiction of stormtroopers. I think that would make it would look a little less jarring.
I could see that. Like I said, and then the final image, the final panel of the story is of Han and Lando, of Lando, Luke, and C-3PO taking off in the Y-wing. And there's this ghostly image of Han and Crisala, and it talks about that they leave with a gentler prize, the special feeling of having their lives touched once more by an old friend and by a new one. And the way dialogue that David Michelinie puts in here, or not the dialogue, the copy, the caption puts in, doesn't reflect this, but the way the image is drawn, the way it's almost done with like no blacks, it's almost like a storybook kind of thing. You get you feel like Infantino's trying to sell that like this was like a great love of Han's, which of course the story itself doesn't really sell, because I've always been dubious of any of those, of any TV series and stuff where like the main character meets someone, falls in love with them for that one episode, and then they're dispatched and you're supposed to believe that they're like they're so totally torn up, and you're like, they did it once on MASH, they did it on Star Trek a bunch of times, and you're like, really?
Oh, yeah.
You fell in love that fast? Like and this person's never mentioned again. Like but again, I think that's something Infantino was trying to layer in with this art, not so much Michelinie in the text. Because in the text, Michelinie is just sort of saying, hey, this person that they've never met, that they see floating there, really did them a solid, you know, I mean, really helped them out, didn't know it. But so it's more of, again, he literally calls them a friend. So the image and the text don't exactly match. But nevertheless, again, I'm kind of nitpicking a little bit in that it is a nice adventure. And you can maybe conceive that, you know, obviously Hana's a thing for princesses, as we now know.
Absolutely. Well, it's like, yeah, he just had to take his boots off for the night before with Chrysala and then put them back on in the morning. A la Captain Kirk. So he totally Captain Kirk there. But yeah, this was a fling. There's no doubt about that. This was a fling. But I guess what you're talking about for that artwork is that, yeah, it does kind of imply there's a big connection. It's like, no, not really. But, you know, although they still obviously, you know, cared for each other more than enough in the story.
She really loved Han because look at the sacrifice she makes for him, for Pete's sake.
Well, she also was doing it, for her, planet.
That's
for her
true. For her people. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. She kind of had worked both ways. I was kind of wondering about the name they get with the Tyrus of Ventuine. I don't know what that, I looked up that name a little bit. Yeah, I could see some proper name definitions for it, but not a real definition for it as a title. As almost play with the idea that it's a weird feminine version of tyrant, which would almost fit the Satab's sort of role in the story. I was kind of thinking about that.
Speaking of, I have to ask you about names, though. I'm glad you brought up names. This is now the third planet we've heard of that end with Uin. We've got Tatooine, we've got Dantooine, and we have Ventuine. And it makes me wonder, it's like, whoever names these planets are like these planets considered like, pardon my language, like the, you know, the shithole planets of the Star Wars universe. So they're just giving the Udine suffix at the end because you're like, well, you know, the Star Wars universe, I know that George Lucas is just really lazy, as we know, in terms of his naming conventions, but it's sort of funny that there's like, there's Tatooine, Dantooine, Ventuine. It's like, is this like North Dakota and South Dakota? Like, what is that? Like, why is everybody, why are all these planets Uines at the end of it? Like, come on, we come up with another name.
That's great. I do not know about that, but I do want a Tim Tween.
Right, yeah. There must be more of that.
Come on.
There's got to be more Uines. I haven't been to Wikipedia, but there must be more of those. So, but instead, so overall, though, I thought this was a solid comic. Rereading it was fun. I certainly loved it as a kid. I remember what newsstand I bought it off of. And I loved Star Wars. I loved Han. So just having another adventure with him was cool. And, of course, you know, it was an extra long story. So that was really cool too, because you got more for your, you know, more bang for your buck.
Absolutely. I was going to go back a little bit in the story because I want to ask you about another piece in here where Han is led into this mining cavern, and then they seal the entrance and a monster comes out and attacks, and Han takes the monster out.
He does.
And it's like, this is totally Luke facing the Rancor
in
Return of the Jedi.
Yep.
But they didn't know about that scene before they wrote this.
I'm sure David Michelinie did not. I think Lucasfilm was pretty tight-lipped about that stuff.
Yeah, so by being just accidentally that same scene, but with Han playing the part of Luke in it, I just think that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. It's a fun monster, the giant purple monster with this droopy stuff off his mouth and stuff. But yeah, Han throws like a spear and it knocks a, what is it, stalagmite or
stalactite?
Stalactite, thank you. He knocks the stalactite off and it spears him right through the chest. It's great. Yeah.
He goes.
He gets it worse than the Rancor. The Rancor just got crushed by the door. This guy gets impaled right through the chest.
Oh, yeah, that's a much better way to die. Yes.
Yeah. absolutely. So, yeah, I'm sure Michelinie did not know what was coming. And speaking of David Michelinie, I reached out to him and I asked him a couple of questions about writing this comic because I was curious about it, and he was kind enough to write back. So I want to get into that as we're wrapping up here, just a couple of things I asked David about writing this comic. And I said, so as the regular Star Wars writer, was this Han Solo story something you had in mind already for the series? And then when the annual came up, you decided to use it there. And he said, when I took over writing the monthly Star Wars at Marvel, Lucasfilm had only placed two limits on me. I wasn't to create a second Death Star, since they were already doing that in Return of the Jedi. And I couldn't get Han Solo out of his carbonite prison. We, my co-plotter Walter Simonson and I, got around the first by recreating the giant killer, planet killer canon without the Death Star around it in issues 51 and 52. But having a story while Han was still in Carbonite was more problematical, since it's hard to craft an adventure story around a character who at the time couldn't move or talk. So when Marvel scheduled a Star Wars annual that year, I decided to try a Han story as a flashback. Lucasfilm didn't have a complaint, and I had a blast writing it. And then I said, when writing Han Solo or any of the Star Wars characters, did you always have the actors and how they played them in your head, or did you regard the Marvel versions as separate and distinct from that? And then he said, whenever I adapt a movie to comics or write a series based on characters established in another medium, I feel a responsibility to their existing fans to stay as close to the original as possible. And this includes staying true to character speech patterns. So yes, whenever I wrote Han or Luke, Leia, et cetera, I heard their voices in my head as I was constructing their dialogue. So, all right. Thank you so much, David, for that information. That's awesome.
Those are fantastic. Thank you for doing that. That's so great. I really was a big fan of David Michelinie's long run on Amazing Spider-Man.
Yep. He wrote Aquaman. A lot of great Aquaman stories.
Yes. And he also did a good run on Iron Man as well. Some good stuff from there. Great creator. Absolutely. I gotta say though, constructing a story around a character that can't move or talk. I think we have a new Weekend at Bernie's sequel in mind.
Weekend at Ventuine or something like that. That'd be great. Yeah, he's propping up Han Solo all the time. That would be really. Yeah, he's blind and stuff. He's got the carbon blindness or whatever. That'd be perfect.
Chewie's just walking his statue around all the time.
That would be great. Yeah, except that's like a Tag and Bink story or something. Those two comedy characters from the Star Wars.
Oh yeah,
from the Dark Horse Star Wars comics or whatever. So, but he said overall, I think this is it's a really fun comic, and I was excited to read it because, again, I loved Star Wars, and the annuals were always fun because I loved that the annuals, when I was a kid, that the annuals would come out in addition to the regular series, which I always thought was like such a nice bonus. Obviously, those were rewards for books that sold well because they were trying to get in a 13th issue. But, I mean, on top of having a regular Star Wars comic, I had the annual as well. And in the eternity between Star Wars films at the time, kids can't think about that nowadays. But, I was 7, 10, and 13. I was 6, 9, and 12 when the Star Wars movies came out. So imagine the gulf between 6 and 9. And 9 and 12. And so I soaked up every bit of Star Wars I could get my hands on because I just wanted it so bad. And the space between movies seemed like an eternity. So having this series every month was just amazing.
I feel you all the way because yes, I was 9, 12, and 15 when those came out. And imagine being a burgeoning teenager. It's like, where is my Star Wars? I don't need more angst.
Yeah, seriously. I got to go to Tashi, pick up some power. Never mind.
Or honkst.
Or honkst. There you go. Oh, very nice. Gutierrez will like that. So anyway, well, Tim, thank you so much for stopping by and talking about this comic with me. I appreciate that you were willing to kind of read something you'd never read before as opposed to dipping into the nostalgia bucket, which is what I do every month on the show, like reading something brand new. So I really appreciate you stopping by and doing the show with me.
Oh, thank you very much. I will gladly reach into the nostalgia bucket. Have no fear. but yeah, it's still great that we have, the Marvel Unlimited app and DCU app and things on Comixology that we can check out these things that are new to us. So I really like that too.
I should say this comic is up on Comixology. So if you want to read it, you can get it on Comixology. It's part of the Marvel Star Wars series. So Tim, why don't you tell people where they can find you on the internet?
Will do. But first, thank you so much for having me on the show, Rob. It's been great fun. So on the internet, the best place to find me is on Twitter at TimPrice17. But I'm also on a couple of podcasts right now. I'm on the Batgirl's Cassandra Cain podcast. That's from the Right On Network with Astrid Wright. You can find our website at thehuntresspodcast.com. And the Twitter feed for that is Huntress Podcast because it shares a feed with the Batgirl podcast. And I have just released the third episode of Outcasters,
yes,
Batman and the Outsiders podcast. Yes. Covering Batman and the Outsiders number 2. That's also on the same feed as the Huntress podcast and the Batgirl podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Bat Outcasters. And I've been the host, producer of that one. so grateful to have Ashford as the co-host on that one. And that has been so much fun. And I've been so blown away by all the support and positive feedback I've gotten from the podcasting community. So thank you, especially you, Rob. I know you're out there all the time.
I've been waiting so long for somebody to do a Batman and the Outsider show. So
awesome. And so it's been just a joy to do.
Absolutely. Well, very cool. Again, thank you so much for stopping by. And of course, everybody, if you want to follow this show, FW Presents and Mountain Comics is part of the FW Presents feed, go to our website, finewaterpodcast.com. You can also subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. And if you want to support, we're always talking Mountain Comics over on my Twitter feed for this show, which is FWP Mountain Com. And if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, go to patreon.com/FW podcast, and there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So if you want to support FW Presents or even specifically Mountain Comics, go to patreon.com/FW podcast. So that's going to do it. Thanks everybody for listening. Next month is going to be the final episode of season 4 of Mountain Comics as we're heading into the winter. Boo! I'm going to wrap up Mountain Comics. It's my summer show. So I always feel like I'm cheating even going all the way into November with this show, but I try to do like 6 episodes a season. So next month we're going to be wrapping it up, which means we're going to do one more comic, and then I'm going to do some listener feedback covering the season to this point. So again, thanks everybody for listening. I'm going to grab some Yoo-Hoo out of the fridge, and Tim and I are going to sit on the porch and read some comics and look out over the lake as the sunset. So again, thanks everybody for listening, and we will see you next month. Bye-bye.